Blog Talk Radio.
Where three cats get together and discover. Let me take that word back, discover. Sometimes we actually do discover. Actually, we basically share dialogue and love relations in different factors of life. One happens to be in Connecticut, one happens to be in Ohio, and one in Illinois. You know, we don't shy away from things that need to be said. We look out for a self-evaluation, kind of look in the mirror. And we just spend some time over the next, spend some time over the next 90 minutes just going over some things and putting some things on the griddle. One of the cats that happens to be in Illinois is Mr. DeMaurice. So let's get him in. So how he's feeling? How you feeling, sir?
Hey, man, I have no complaints. Who listens anyway? So no sense complaining.
You can't take that approach, man. You know I've been listening to your complaining. Well, maybe half of your complaining for many years, bro. Many years. I apologize if I sound a little different this evening, man. It's funny. I call this the radio voice. Over the years, I've always seemed to have getting laryngitis once a year, and I guess it's my time for this year to kind of have it flare up. So if I don't sound like myself, I sound like a wounded cat. Just forgive me for that. Got a couple of things we're going to do this evening. Actually, we're going to speak on. I've been thinking about this all week, man. Last week, when Mr. Charles said he don't argue, he don't like to argue. That just kind of stuck with me, man, and. It kind of made me laugh sometime, but at the same time, it kind of made me want to kind of go into it a little deeper. So, thanks to you, Mr. Charles. We're going to spend some time talking about arguing. How you feeling, Mr. Charles?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. I was just saying that, you know, last week you said you don't care for arguing. And when we, you know, when the show ended, man, I thought about that a few times throughout the week. And Mr. DeMaurice, you might remember this, man. That was a show we watched growing up called The Honeymooners. And this show was recorded back. they had a classic line, and it was quarterback, maybe recorded, let's say, 50 years ago. Ed Norton was talking to Jackie Gleason, but I actually was talking to one of Jackie Gleason's cousins that was getting married. And he said, the guy said, I don't like to argue. He said, well, then you don't like to argue. What are you getting married for?
I always remember that line. I remember that line.
Yeah, man. Oh. That line was so true. I mean, you know, nowadays you don't have to get married to argue. It's always in front of you. But we're going to spend some time talking about arguing because I believe there's a right way to do it, and I think there's a benefit to arguing. And I think a lot of times we go about it the wrong way and we miss out on some of the pertinent things that we can get from it. So we'll spend a little time talking about that. But I want to start with this young lady here, Nicole Colbert. The name may not sound that familiar to you, but she was on the show a couple of years ago, and she's out of Washington, D.C., Early this year, she discovered that she had cancer, and she's been battling it for a few months courageously. I mean, really showing some strength, helping other people that basically with other things they've been dealing with. And I've been in contact with her a little bit, and she came out early this week and said that she's done with chemotherapy and that the cancer is gone. So we wanted to basically say congrats to her and let her know we know we're still praying for her. Praying for you, we're on your side. But she came out and stated something that I wanted us to spend a little time going on as well. She brought out a little thing I thought was interesting. It was a little twist on something we're used to hearing quite often. It stated, sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. And I was like, whoa, okay. I never kind of seen it that way. I may have never thought about that way. But with that being said, I'm going to kick it back to you, Mr. DeMaurice. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. Hearing it, maybe not for the first time, but just hearing it this time. What does it jump out and say to you?
Basically, that when you win in life, sometimes we don't look at the lessons behind why we win or the fruits of our labor or why we succeed. But when things don't really go right and you lose in life, there's supposed to be a lesson there to help you get to the next level. And I think we lose that. And so this is a very profound statement. when, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. We're supposed to learn from our mistakes or learn when we lose. I even take it to sports. If you get beat, if you're sparring, if you're fighting or whatever, you have to learn the lesson of, okay, what did I do wrong? What can I improve on? So that this doesn't happen again. What do I need to learn in this particular situation that I'm in? And so when she stated that, that's how I kind of took the statement.
Mr. Charles, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sir. Your reaction?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great what she said. It's quite humbling, hard to receive, though, sometimes, because no one wants to lose. Nobody likes to lose. But the lesson, and I think DeMaurice hit it on point, when you, like in sports or whatever, even in life, you might lose, and then you end up having an opportunity to kind of face or repeat the person that you lost to or the thing you lost to. And so the question is, do you learn from that experience? So, yeah, I agree totally with that one. It's hard, though, sometimes because nobody wants to lose.
Yeah, we don't. We definitely don't, you know, desire to lose. And losing can be tough, brother. There's a lot to learn from losing. There's a lot to learn from winning as well. But I think the learning part and the knowledge you gain is when you lose, flip it and don't look at it as a loss. Look at it as something you can learn from. Gentlemen, you know, we had an opportunity to have guests on our show throughout the years. Man, we've been doing this for quite some time. I try not to put years on this anymore. Man, I'm just going to say for now quite some time because we've been doing this for a bit. And we're still going strong, and I'm thankful that we are. But in the past, we had a young lady come on, Miss Dolores, and she read some poetry. We're going to bring her back on this evening and do something a little different. But in the meantime, I want to welcome her back to the show. Miss Dolores, welcome back to When Black Men Talk. How are you feeling? Hello? Well, she was there. Maybe she got, I think, something happened with the board. That's what happens sometimes when you do things, man. The technology part, they want to work with him. But we'll kind of move on. We'll keep it going straight. I want to go back to what I was speaking of earlier when I spoke about arguing. And I want to kind of go back and touch back on that because, I think it gives us a reason to basically, or give us a chance to kind of basically hear another person, hear what they're thinking, and kind of maybe see things a little different. But I think sometimes when we're arguing, we get lost in maybe trying to win, trying to say something that I'll do something else. Or maybe try to say some things that hurt a person's feelings. And I would say majority of times I think I've had an argument or a disagreement with the opposite sex. It seemed like they were always trying to basically say some things that might have basically hurt my feelings. I think we might have Ms. Dolores. If we do, we're going to go to her. Ms. Dolores, how are you feeling?
I'm doing good. Sorry. I'm doing really well this evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm thankful that you took a little time out to spend a little time with us. We have Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles in here as well. Let me say welcome to you because there's a time when I had guests and I didn't have these cats around, man, and they got mad at me and they said it's time you bring it on, especially women, to the show and not let them be part of it. So if you don't mind, I'm going to have them just say hello to you this way. When we get together without you, I ain't got to hit their mouth running. Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, say hello to Mr. Dolores.
Wait a minute, man. We never had a problem with you having.
Yeah. First of all, why you telling
why
him,
you
bro?
Doing that, man?
You always trying to make yourself look good. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
So we don't care. That's you, though, trying to act well. You know.
That's your show.
Whatever. Yeah, it's your show.
Here we go.
Don't put
here
that
we
on
go.
Them.
Here we go.
You was up, Mr. Lawrence. He just trying to look good.
You guys
always showing up for the people. Always showing up.
Always showing out when we, Mr. Lawrence, he always showing out when we got company.
So we sit like kids, huh?
You know, I know when you came on earlier, a few years ago, actually, it's been a little while, you were doing poetry. But it seemed like to me, I've been paying attention. You've been doing a lot of things since then. If you don't mind, fill us in, please.
Well, I've been still writing poetry, trying to get into writing a book with short stories combined with poetry. I'm also into art and sculpture now. I love sculpturing. And, you know, I've been in and around the town of D.C. performing at open mic for COVID-19 hit, so I'm kind of stuck right now.
Okay.
But other than that, I've been doing pretty good, pretty well.
Okay. All right. The reason why I ask, you know, I touched base with you during the week to come on, because you stated something that really piqued my interest. And I think a lot of us feel this, but a lot of times we don't want to kind of put it off here. So I want you to come on and kind of give us the background of your statement, how you feel about it, how you got there, you know, stuff of that nature. It was simply stated, I gave up religion to find God. What I found could not be contained nor are found within the confines of a church. I'll say it again. I gave up religion to find God. What I found could not be contained nor found within the confines of a church. Some people might say, okay, you know, what is that about? What is she saying? So I said, you know what? Bring her on. Let's talk about it. So with that being said, you know,
yeah,
let's hear when you put that together, what was going on? What was happening behind it?
I had been going to a lot of churches. I don't have a church home. And didn't really ever have a church home since I was a kid. I just been in and out of different churches through invite or just feeling the need to go and worship. But there was one particular church that I won't mention any names, that I decided that, gee, this is a good church to join. I would like to become a member. So, of course, you know, they introduce you to the congregation because you're a visitor. You're not a member of the church. And at the end of the service, they asked us, you know, meet them in the basement, all who wanted to join, which I did. And they gave a little, the instructions of what it takes to be a member. And I guess I just got really turned off because they asked for my 1040. And I was like, well, what's that about? Well, we want to make sure that each member is giving the proper amount. So I said, what is the proper amount? They said, well, at least 10% of your income. Well, perhaps I can't give that amount each week or whenever you need it. Or maybe throughout the year I can't give 10% of my income. Can I volunteer and give my time or do others? Yeah, you can do that as well as the 10%. And on top of it, they told me that if someone was to become ill in my family and I needed a minister to visit them at the church, do not call the minister, do not call the associate member minister, that we were given permission from the Most High to lay hands on our family member and pray. And I was like, no, 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 no. Of course, this was one of those mega churches. So I just didn't really say anything. I took all the paperwork home, but I knew I wasn't going to join. And then I went to another church a few weeks later. Seemed like it would be a nice church to join. I never officially tried to join because a few weeks I found out that they were having a problem with children being abused sexually that were in the choir. And I found out that every time I have a problem, I don't go to the church. If I have a need or something that needs to be fulfilled, I simply ask God for it or whomever he may be. I get quiet and I feel comfort in that. I don't feel I have to go to church to do things, to have God answer my prayers. Because the most idiotic thing that I think I've ever heard was that when people, well, let me rephrase it. I feel when I reach the golden gate, God is going to ask me, did you use everything that I gave you? She's given us everything we need to succeed in what we want to do. Whatever desire is in your heart, your career, your family, your marriage, it's in your heart. He's given you all the tools you need to succeed. And when I reach the golden gates, I don't want him to say, well, did you use all the tools that I gave you? Mainly your brain. I do not like following ministers reading from a Bible scripture that I don't believe. I had the biggest problem and discussion with one of my friends, and I'm not don't know the scriptures very well, but I never believed that my God would tell me, would allow me to be a slave, and that my slave owner could beat me as long as he didn't kill me. Idiotic. No, that's not my God. Couldn't be my God. My God would never ask that of me.
You know, I've always felt this. Thank you for sharing. And we're going to come back to it. But I always felt this, that the greatest relationship that you can have at all is the God, the relationship you carry with God. I always felt that personally. And it's interesting that you talked about the heard that about people saying they went to churches and they asked for this. I've known people that went to church. They wanted a credit report, all this type of stuff. You would think they're buying a house. And it seemed like in some places, I'm not going to say all churches, but in some places they've gotten so far away from what they should be there for. And a lot of people just go in because they want to be counted. And they think that the church itself is somewhat of an intersection that can just bring them to God and look at the person that's standing, the minister, whatever the case may be, as this person has a turnpike for them to get to God, not knowing that their vessel, as you spoke of, their heart of their own, is their main vessel, and their doings is their main vessel, I believe, to get to God. So it's interesting that to hear you say that, and I'm glad you did, because sometimes as men, if you look around a lot of these churches, you don't see a lot of men there. And it's part of the reasons why we're not there, because we kind of seen church, in a sense, for a period of time as being a hustle. I'm not saying all of them are, but there are a lot of are. Because you spoke of a church you went to that has sexual abuse going on with minors. There's no way in the world you have grown adults at a church and kids are being abused and nobody's doing nothing about it and overlooking it and looking the other way.
As an adult going to a church, there are some things, common sense. I think the biggest problem is they aren't using their common sense, and I think you will be held accountable for it. He's giving you a brain that's fully functional. Why would you get on the internet and record yourself as a minister having sex with your congregation?
I want to ask Mr. D. Maurice, when you hear what she said, how it resonated with you, sir. Because we've talked about this maybe sometime on the air, but we talked about it numerous times off the air. So I want to get your initial reaction, Mr. D. Maurice, when you hear that she stopped by a couple of churches. She's been looking for a church home and really could not come across one. Your reaction, sir.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised with the statement. In Chicago, I know on the south and west side, you have like maybe three or four churches every block, church and liquor stores. And so it just seems to be a hustle at some particular point. One of the things that I started to recognize going to church, and I don't fault people for going to church and serving their God the way they see fit, but where I became more spiritual and less religious is when I started to go to church and it seemed like I was part of the performance. You knew where everything was happening. The songs, you know, when they were going to be sung. You knew the different Bible verses that were going to be said. They gave you a program. You knew when the collection plate was going to come out. I mean, it became like it was a chore instead of going there and getting enlightenment or getting something that you needed to sustain you and to sustain your faith. It became like a show, and even if you're not behind the scenes, you're part of the performance because, you know, the performers, some of I would call performers on the in the pulpit would be encouraging to say amen at certain points, you know, to encourage them to do what they needed to do to get a response from you, things of that sort. So it seemed like I started to lose a lot of why I was going to church because of I started to look at it as more performance than actually a religious experience or a spiritual experience. So I started to kind of take myself out of it. And then, you know, when you, I know being in Chicago, you hear about different pastors and different religious leaders who are living really well, but, you know, and telling their parishioners to say, you know what, if you're having troubles and all that other stuff, go pray to God for it and God will provide. But when they needed something, they're in that pulpit asking for it to get special offerings for all this other stuff. Didn't really make sense to me. And so that's where you kind of see, okay, maybe this is a little hustle and not really the church or the particular religion I need to be in. You start to see it, and you mentioned earlier about men kind of pulling away from it. We know hustle when we see it, especially if you live out in the streets and you know the game. You know a hustle when you see it. And so a lot of these pastors start either looking like pimps, politicians, or pastors. They're all looking for the same thing. They're trying to get something for nothing. And they're telling you this is how you get it, but you're seeing them get the gains, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what's going on here? Something's not right here.
You know, you can.
That's over. You agree.
Please continue.
You should be driving around in the most luxurious vehicle when your church is in a community that is suffering. I just don't believe it. I mean, I read these things every day, and it's amazing that the parishioners aren't using their God-given gift of their brain. It doesn't work. It doesn't resonate with me. I don't understand it. I said I would just rely on what God had given me and be happy with what he had given me to work my way through my problems. Not saying that I don't believe in God, but I will fight and pray, not just pray for what I want and think it's going to drop in my lap.
Yeah. It's interesting because you spoke of it earlier. You spoke about you took it back to slavery. And I'm not going to say, you know, take it back to slavery, but there is somewhat of a brainwashing control that goes on in a lot of churches, whether you want to believe it or not. In my opinion, it just does. And it takes advantage of the weak. They may not see themselves as being weak. But again, it takes advantage of the weak that feel that I need someone else outside of me to connect with God. And they're looking for them. Because we all have trials and tribulations in our lives. But when they go to that, those trials and tribulations, they just don't trust enough that they can basically go in prayer on their own, and it could be sustained, and it could be worked on their own, so they feel they must be connected and be around. And as you said, Mr. DeReese, they will tell them, you know, keep on praying, but keep giving your money, but keep on praying. And I want to say this money part real fast, and I'll come to you, Mr. Charles, I want to bring you in on this. I said this, I think, earlier in the spring when the pandemic was really going strong. I visited the Potter House, T.D. Jakes Church, a few years ago. And I guess I must have filled something out with my email address on it. And I haven't, you know, they should send me emails and stuff years ago. But I found it interesting. Somehow my, you know, my email stayed in their database, and that's cool. But early on when the pandemic was really kind of strong, they sent me an email asking for money. I'm not a member of that church. And they list all the things. They list all the things he was doing in Africa, he was doing here, and all this stuff. But they list nothing that he was doing currently when in terms of what's going on currently right now. And what I find to be interesting, when things are good, things are really, really good, you see these cats everywhere. They popping up on talk shows, they doing this, they doing that. You can find them giving a nice, sobering word when the pandemic was going, when it was going on strong. You can find them. Because to me, if you're really doing God's work, this is the time we need to hear from you. And you couldn't find them. You could not find them, but yet they could sit in the back and see an email and beg for money. So I found that to be really interesting. So you have to have a mind and a strong mind of your own. You know, my mother always, you know, instilled that in me, that you have to be strong enough on your own or you will follow and be led and know where you're going to be led to. Mr. Charles, I want to get you to get your reaction, sir.
Yeah, a lot of what she mentioned and said hit home for me because my experience, I guess like everybody else, has been a little different. I got baptized when I was like 6 or 7. So church back then for me was different than it is now. And the blessing that I appreciate that I have is that my life being so bizarre and different and being crazy, there's only one way that for me that I could I knew things were going my way or I felt it was happening. And then I understood, too, that that we are, as people, are human. And these pastors and whoever it may be make mistakes. And I think a lot of us end up putting our trust in man, and man is going to disappoint you, and woman is going to disappoint you. They're going to make mistakes. And I found that out early on. I still would like to go to church and whatnot. But then after a while, I kind of fell out of it. But as she mentioned, I started to rely on what I knew about the Lord and what it meant to me. And also, my proof was the stuff that I was going through, there was nobody else. There's no way somebody else, a man, could do that. I knew that, and I came to grips with that, and I had that blessing. But the other part of it, too, is just really sad because when you see that, then you have people trying to tell you. Yeah, I had people that were just come close to knowing about religion and then know my background. I go to a church. They're going to tell me, look at me like I'm a heathen. I said, you don't even know my story. And I think I got kind of messed up when about 11 years old at a church, I saw when they paid the ministers after the sermon. And you have the right to do what you want to, but I asked my dad, I said, if you're doing God's work, why do they need to pay you? And my father looked at me like, what? I was like, yeah, he's doing God's work. But the whole point of that was, as she mentioned, I remember us struggling when I was a kid, and the pastor had like 2 Cadillacs. I was like, damn, can we get some of that money? We aren't no weird. But it always comes back to the point of understanding where my strength came from, what I believed in, what I knew to be real. So I would go to church, but I would not also always connect with people because right now it's turned into a game. And last but not least, I'll say this. I totally don't understand why you need a private jet to do God's work.
There you go. I agree. I totally agree. And they give freely.
Yeah. I think it's time that, you know, just like we're doing here, we have to kind of speak on it and kind of get it out there because some people will hear this and start to realize, you know what, I need to look a different way. There's some folks that just always want to believe because they've been raised to think a certain way. It's been embedded in their mind, and they're going to stay there. So, but I think that folks that really see it like we do, we can't be shy and not talk about it. And sometimes you're going to get in conversations where people are going, like you said earlier, throw scriptures at you. My point is, if you're going to throw me one scripture, make sure you're living by them all. Don't throw me one single scripture about something if you're not living by every single one in the book, because no one can, no one does. So don't go find one that's convenient for you and toss it up and act like you're saying something to me, because I that just doesn't resonate with me. Mr. Lewis, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to give you the last word on this, and we're going to kind of do something different. But your last word, and once again, thanks for giving us some opportunity to engage you in conversation. Your last word, please.
I just say believe in what you believe in, follow your heart, and do what is necessary to survive, but make sure you use your brain and process the information that you're getting. And believe in yourself, basically. Believe in yourself and what God gave you to function with.
Can't be said better than that. Thanks for spending some time with us. I'll be in touch. We're going to get you back on again soon. It's my Black Man Talk, Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, and thank you, Mr. Lewis, for spending some time. We'll take a little short break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll talk about, thank you. We'll talk about something that Mr. Charles ain't fond of. But maybe when we're done, he might like a little better. given reasons or citing evidence to support an idea, an exchange or an expression of diverging or opposite views. That is the object of an argument, in a sense, when you find something that two parties or more parties than one can't agree on something, but at the same time they're trying to coexist and find a common ground. There lies an argument. So I want to go back sometimes because I think we've all had arguments or disagreements with the opposite sex. And this is what I've always found to be interesting when this happens, because this was some arguments I've been in, man. I wonder what was the reason for doing this? What was the reason for even having this? Because sometimes they've come out of nowhere. You could just be doing something to it. You could be driving, for that matter. And they might just come out of nowhere. And you say to yourself, okay, what was the premise of this? What was the foundation? How did this get started? What set this off? So I'm going to go back, and I want to ask you first, Mr. Charles. I'm going to be first with this one. When you think about the majority arguments that you might have had with the opposite sex, was it an exchange to kind of maybe get to a common ground, or did it end up being diversion of really kind of getting away from what should really be discussed?
Well, it started out as a trying to get to a common ground, but I think it was a diversion. And the sad thing about it is, I think you hit it on the head earlier when you mentioned about a lot of people don't know how to argue. And I think that's probably why what has been my issue with arguing, because it's one thing to debate and come to a common ground and say, hey, I don't understand this. But when you have to be right or feel like you need to be right, then I think that's a problem. And the other part of it that has bothered me, you mentioned about the some people that I've dealt with in the opposite sex, is they want to tell you how something should be done. Like, let's talk finances real quick. But everything you've done with your finances is backwards. You're struggling. You're struggling with your bills. Your struggles have not been right. So you haven't done it right. So if somebody else has had a little bit more success than you, instead of arguing, why wouldn't you receive it so we can be better together? And that's what I find. That was bizarre as hell to me. I'm like, well, you're behind on this, you're behind on that, you don't own really anything. So if somebody has a little bit more knowledge or a little bit more expertise, you should receive it. But again, it comes back to the point of not receiving, not meeting at a mutual understanding, instead of somebody feeling the need, or both parties feeling the need to be right.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, you touched on a good point about being right or winning. It's like they want to feel, a lot of times people want to feel that they won the argument. And sometimes if the argument ends and they don't feel like they've won, they'll restart it, because the goal for them is to feel like they shut you down. But what is accomplished? Nothing, for the most part. And that's why sometimes, I don't know if you two have experiences, I'm pretty sure you have, because I've learned a long time ago, my experiences are just not my experiences. You know, we all kind of experience the same things at different times with different people. But a lot of times, that's why you tend to have the same argument over and over and over again, because it was never cleared. It was never brought to a conclusion. Okay. And, you know, you feel this way, I feel this way. And even with an argument, you don't have to always agree. But for me, if I'm going to be in a conversation, an argument with you, I want to come with the fact, I want something to think about. Because your stance, to me, should make me reevaluate what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. And if I can find something different or add on to what I'm thinking, that's a bonus for me. I'm cool with that. I'm not looking at it and close off to where, oh, I feel this way just is. So if you say something that enlightens me, in a sense, even prove to me I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to say to you, you know what, I didn't see it that way. I apologize for what I was thinking and feeling, because to me, I want to be better. That's the goal for me. I'm not going to come at it to where I'm trying to abuse your feelings, hurt your feelings, whatever. Now, here again, if you take that role, I could roll that way with you. That's a choice I can make or not make. But if I choose to go that role and I start hurting your feelings, don't act like, you know, you didn't start it, because I won't go there first. But I do have that as an option, and I have that as a card I can play. Mr. DeMaurice, same question for you, sir. Your past arguments were speaking basically now on the opposite sex. Have there been something of an exchange, or you kind of look back and go, you know what, that was just based on a diversion? Amen. I'm sorry, sir. For some reason, we got you out of the box, bro. Sorry about that, bro. I'm sorry. You know what? Tonight is just—it's just one of those nights with the—it's one of those nights, man. It's just it. I'm sorry. I apologize for you get started. So if you was
trying
talking,
to keep a brother down,
I know.
Let me say my bad, bro. Because we always want to hear you when you talk. I'm sorry. Please continue.
All right. I'm going to say diversion. Generally, I don't like to argue. I'm with Ice on that because arguments are. The emotion gets involved, and once the emotion gets involved, that becomes the argument instead of what you're trying to resolve. And then, you know, it comes to a point where arguments, to me, I think most people don't know how to or the rules of engagements and arguments, so they don't really really kind of amount to much. And what happens is the argument is somebody, one person wants to win. One person feels they're right and they want to win. And me and Django, one of the guys that we put on the show from time to time, a sports show, we were talking about this yesterday, and the question came up, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because you can't have both. So do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And it's funny that we're talking about this particular subject, about arguments. But most of the time it's been a diversion to get to something else that had nothing to do with what you're having the disagreement about. And I've seen that not only in past relationships, but just watching other people's relationships and being a witness to arguments. So, you got to have a winner and a loser. And most folks don't lose gracefully. So they're going to keep the argument going until you come around to seeing it their way, because that's the only way they want you to see it. And sometimes in these arguments that it gets to that point where it gets so emotional that I've been in these situations where you forget what you were arguing about because the emotion kind of just takes over.
Believe it or not, relationships conflicts can actually be a healthy thing. You know, we kind of lose sight of that. I know I spoke earlier about opposite sex. I'm going to bring it back to men basically arguing. And I find this interesting because, I mean, I think our arguments in a sense have changed a little bit too, but I go back to us in a sense where I think sometimes that we may have disagreements, just on the, maybe not on this show, we do a sports show as well, and we might have some different disagreements, whatever, we found a way with those disagreements to work together. And it's funny, I thought about this too during the week, man. When Mr. Charles says something like to argue, he's not into arguing, I said, I'll be damned, because we've been doing a sports show for about, 6-7 years? And if you listen to those shows, man, who do you hear arguing the most? Me and Mr. Charles. There's always arguing going on. It can be subtle, but, you know, it's always something. But at the end of it, man, I respect him even more. And it's like I've never lost that, and I've never set out to do something. And I'm sure you feel the same way. We don't set out to basically hammer. It's like we have points that we want to drive. We may disagree, but we find a way to make it exist. And the next time that we get together, we don't forget what we talked about. More than likely, we don't forget what was said, who said it, if we move past it. And that's something that I think that our argument should be. If you're going to have one, a disagreement, it'd be something that, you know, you're going to have a talk. Hey, do what you got to say, what you got to say, but you move beyond it. You don't let it change the nature of your relationship with someone, what you feel, or what went on, or you start to dislike this person. I mean, I've known people that, I know some cats even at work, man. They can have an argument with people, and then they stop talking to them. Then they come to you and say to me, you know, I haven't talked to this person in 2 years. I tell them, bro, you're stupid. They say, why? Good. Bro, you walk around for one conversation, and you chose not to speak to him because you and him had a disagreement. For 2 years, bro? That's childlike, man. You know, hug it out, do what you got to do, move on, because to me, as men, we should be better than that. You should be able to basically talk some things out. Guess what? The next day, if you want to go out for drinks, go out for drinks, bro. You don't sit around and let something you talk about, you know, stop a relationship. If you had a good relationship prior to the day that you two had a disagreement, why would that disagreement over something that's real trivial in the first place change what you two share? Which I think is just kind of idiotic. So I want to, you know, we spoke of the opposite sex, but I want to go now with men and how we basically go back and forth with each other. As we stand back and look at this, Mr. DeMaurice, have we been doing it healthily, or are we been doing a little unhealthy arguing with each other?
As men in general, sometimes it varies on the relationship you have with that particular dude. So you, I, and Ice have a relationship where we know that once we said what we said, it's nothing personal. We ain't trying to fight each other afterwards or, you know, trying to oppose each other's will. Even with this show, we all have different opinions. And so we just let them stand, and then we let the audience pick what opinion that they want to go with or what they agree with. And so there's no hard feelings. I know there was some heated, in the podcast, in the videos, I think people enjoy seeing us kind of go at it and have our rants and stuff like that. And, you know, there's no kind of animosity after that. But I think it's due to the relationship I think we have. And I think most men don't have that relationship where they can say something and then they can agree to disagree or walk away and say, you know what, you're this way, I'm that way, but we're still connected in, you know, whether we're friends, associates, or whatever. And so that's where you see folks going to the trunk, trying to pull out guns and all that other stuff, because they don't know how to resolve that. They don't know how to handle those emotions. They don't want to be wrong. And they don't have the relationship with that particular person saying, you know what, even though we disagree, doesn't mean that I hate them or they hate me. So I think it depends on the relationship that you have with other brothers. Now, I don't see in my lifetime, I do see it sometimes, but I see it less and less now with the climate of folks just getting, you know, all up in their feelings and wanting to retaliate using violence or you know, not talking to somebody or something negative and kind of just stifling the relationship that you had before based on something that you disagreed with.
You touched on a good point about getting in your feelings, bro. You touched on a very good point about that, and I think that's a big part of it. And speaking of which, man, our next show, we're going to focus on that a little bit more about men. Are we thinking first of our emotions instead of our mind, our logic, thoughts? Are we using our emotions to think first? And we're going to speak about being happy. You know, are we really trying to be happy? And there's a question, man, that I'm glad I'm kind of saying this because it'll give us some time to kind of really kind of fill this question out. But I want us to kind of really speak to, you know, why were we born? If someone wants to walk up to you and ask, you know, why were you born? You know, what were you born for? What were you born to do? Why are you here? You know, so those are three things we'll probably touch on the next time we get together. But Mr. Charles, speaking of men, they're basically handling conflicts with arguments. Does it seem like we're understanding that, you know, it's okay to basically come together, say what you got to say, and then kind of move away from it, and everything just should be good?
Yeah, but I think I agree with what DeMaurice mentioned about the relationship that you had with the individuals. And part of it is, though, and for the record, we don't argue, bruh. We debate. We don't argue, okay? We don't argue. Now, you might, I don't know about what you think arguing is. We don't argue. We debate. We might be a little heated. We want to get our point across, but no, we don't argue, bruh. We debate. And I'm good with that because nobody's being belittled or nothing. You know, everything is, we just giving an opinion. So, no, we don't argue, bro. I consider it a debate. So, you know, it's like that mano-a-mano, that macho thing, whatever it is, it's more of a debate. But then again, it's still respectful because at the end of the day, as DeMaurice said, we leave it out to the people to decide who they want to roll with or what they think. But as men, I think it's important to remember that we should not belittle one another, but we also must realize, too, that who we are. And I think if you are up mad at another person because of what they said to you or said about you and let them bring you down, it means to me that you don't feel good about yourself. You don't feel good about who you are and what you represent because you kind of got in your feelings. And if you really care about somebody, that's the other thing, too, very quickly. If I'm not really connected with somebody, more than likely, you're not going to be around me like that. You won't be my friend. You'll be my acquaintance, right? Because I don't have time for spending my precious time with negativity. If I don't want to be around you and I'm not having a good time, or I just can be an acquaintance. And I think that's one of the things we as men need to always remember. Your your true circle, in my opinion, should not be large. It should be small. It should be with people that you connect with that make you better and kind of build you up from the standpoint that make you even better than who you are, even when you disagree. And that's how I see that.
Very strong points there. Very strong points. You're right, man. I was having a conversation the other day with my son, just talking about friendship in general, and I just touched base on that thing there is that, you know, friendship in a sense, you know, it's kind of short-lived. You know, you get certain feelings from this, but friendship, for the most part, doesn't do much for your actual life. It just doesn't. It's nice to have, but don't get lost up into having friendship and thinking, you know, your boys mean all this stuff to you because, you know, we provide things for each other, but at the end of the day, it's just not that big. Gentlemen, I want to talk about love a little bit and being googly-eyed for love because I think when we were younger, we felt about love a little differently. And I think as we age, as we've been through some things and seen some things, heard some things, felt some things, whatever, we kind of looked at love a little different. And I know the last time we got together, we talked about, you know, love and trust and what percentage we would give trust over love. And it's interesting, I think all three of us rated trust higher than love. And I wonder if I'd have took that same question and posed it to you two maybe 30, 40 years ago, I don't think it would have been the same. I think we looked at love different back then. So the question I have for you, Mr. Charles, has love lost, as we aged, moved on in grace, has love lost some of its innocence for us?
I think so, because I think you understand through experience what's really important. And I think that's very vital, because you mentioned about that googly eyed or that puppy dog love where you just feel all good inside. You got to realize there has to be more to life than just a feeling, an emotion. And we need some consistency. And that's part of love. Because if you're going to open yourself up to, as we said earlier, to somebody and let them know that you can be vulnerable, let yourself to be vulnerable with them, then you want to be seen or treated a certain way. Because you really love somebody, in my opinion, as you get older, you love somebody, there's no need to hurt them. Even if I know you have a weakness, why would I want to tear you down? If I know that's something that makes you vulnerable or something that you're weak in, I'll listen and try to see what I can do to help you get through whatever you're dealing with.
Wow, very good. Very strong, man. Very strong. Mr. DeMaurice. Has love lost its innocence as we started to age? Have we looked at it a little different over the years?
I think so, because, it reminds me of the saying, I think it comes from the Bible, preaching on Sunday here, where fools rush in, where angels fear to tread, or wise men, tread as fools rush in. And so I think life experiences teach you a lot of things where you start seeing things that maybe remind you of things that didn't go well in your past, and you kind of hold back a little bit, or you kind of tread a little bit, because you know that the heart can deceive you sometimes, that you feel like you feel a certain way, and then it stops you from kind of seeing what the realities are. And so I think experience, that comes with experience, because I remember when I thought about this, when I saw the question, I remember when we were younger, and I used to have this crush on a girl named Marla that lived on your street. And at the time, I didn't live on the same street. And none of you could see what I saw when I saw Marla. And y'all used to tease me. And I knew that I had googly eyes for her. But I just saw some things in her that nobody else saw. And so right now, I don't look the same way that I did back then when I was, 7, 8, 9 years old, having that crush. So you kind of take in consideration of what's behind all of this, and you tread instead of rushing in as you get more experienced in this.
You know that every now and then I find someone to attach myself to, and you both know throughout the years, I've attached myself to Maya more. And, you know, still healing from that situation, still healing. I want to kind of thank you, too, for not helping me deal with this matter that, you know, you two should have kind of done. But, you know, that's okay. We persevere, we move on. But we know that she fell in love at the age of 18 to a gentleman at the time that was 27 years old, and he was incarcerated. Now, we're just speaking of innocence of love. She worked diligently to prove his innocence. He was granted release a few months ago based on her work, and he was actually innocent, so it did work itself out. And shortly after, they became husband and wife. And, you know, we say congrats, and, you know, that therefore brings on my healing. But looking at her, the way she handled that, and she was younger at the time, and she's 31 now, and I believe he's 40. Is this something, you know, at our age that we look back at that and say, is this something we can learn or something we can surmise from the way they have handled love, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, it's not uncommon, and I think we talked about this before. It's not uncommon for women to fall in love with guys that are in prison, but somewhere along the exchange and why she was doing this work, I think maybe she may have felt that the creator was leading her towards this particular person. They got to know each other. They got to eventually feel love for each other. They did it in a way that was unconventional. You know, usually we meet people, they're not in prison, we meet them and we kind of rush into, you know, falling in love and all this other stuff. And think about it, you know. She didn't, you know, they didn't have sex for a long time. They got to know each other. They talked to each other. It was almost like they had that time to really kind of get to know who each other were before they made that particular step. So it was unconventional. To me, it's not surprising. It seems like she's a very spiritual and religious woman. And so she, I would think that she had thought this out. She met him at 18, and I think she's 31 now. So she's had, I'm thinking she's had some life experiences outside of this particular gentleman. I don't know that for sure, but it appears that way. So I don't know if, you know, it was some backlash to some people saying, you know, how could you do this, blah, 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 he was in prison, or maybe, you know, there's something kind of shady about it. But I don't look at it that way. I mean, you love who you love. And she took a lot of time. She was patient with this. This is something that she invested in. And when she decided to make her move, and they decided to make their move, they did. So love comes from, you know, some strange places sometimes. And people fall in love in some really kind of awkward circumstances. But, yeah, I there's a lesson to learn in that with, you know, you can't explain love sometimes. You can't explain how you're going to fall in love or what the situation is going to kind of be before you where you kind of make a life decision, a long-term life decision to spend the rest of your life with this person. So that's the lesson I take out of it, and not looking at the negative of, you know, he was in prison and she did this and maybe he was working on her all the time. I'm gonna look at it in a different way than looking at it from a negative standpoint.
Yeah, I think that negative standpoint, and it's easy to take, don't get me wrong, but that negative jaded standpoint comes from, to me, a sense that you've had some stuff going on in your life and you can't see outside of that. You just can't kind of see around it. So everything that happens, not everything, but most things that happen, you may find yourself always looking through the negative eyelash first. And you don't even open the positive eyelash. You just kind of automatically go to everything's jaded, everything's no good. Mr. Charles, it's something we can learn or surmise from their love, how it came about, how it turned out, how things happened. And keep in mind, as you go, man, I'm still healing, my brother. I'm still healing.
I hear you, man. I think it's like anything else. You're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, brother.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's all it was. She missed you. She didn't realize it, but. Like you said, she knew him since he was 18. But I think part of it is particularly we as men, I know I've been guilty of this, of thinking women want so many things when it comes to love that are more materialistic, right? You want the big car, they want the car, they want the house, they want everything to be perfect. But as DeMaurice mentioned about the creator and how I think she fell in love with the man. And the more and more that she was involved with his case and helping him to do what he, you know, to help him to try to get released, I think she just kind of felt like, I think this is going to work. And she believed in a higher being. And then when he got released, bro, it was like, is God telling me something? I bet you that's part of it. Is he telling me something? I worked so hard. I know who this man is. I know he's a good man. And then you release him. And I think that connection for her just kind of went that deep. And I think that a lot of people were on her because they're like, you had everything. You're a millionaire. You this, you that, you play ball. I mean, there's nothing you could ever want for. But I think at the end of the day, all she really wanted was love, bro. And evidently she found it. And I'm happy for her. You know, I hope it's really real for her. And a lot of people, we're so mentally battered and don't understand what true love is. That a lot of men don't understand. A lot of women, they don't need a lot of stuff. They want to be somebody to care about them, somebody to respect them, somebody to have their back, somebody to listen to them. A lot of things that have nothing to do with any amount of money that you could ever present them with. And I think that's where she is right now. And at the end of the day, she happy. She happy, and I think that's what we need to understand more and more. Now, there are some exceptions where some women want all of the stuff, the jewels, the crown jewels, they want all the cash, they want the cars. Yeah, I get that. But there's so many out there women that would give up everything they have so they could feel like they loved and somebody they can come home to and have a beautiful family, whatever it may be, a complete unit that they can spend the rest of their years with. And I think that's the problem a lot of times in the relationship that we have with our older folks now, because we all stuck and don't have nowhere to go.
Got nothing but love for you, baby. Got nothing but love for you. Gentlemen, let's take a little short, little break. We come back, we get to some questions from Mr. D. Maurice and Mr. Charles. That's One Black Man Talk. Mark Hiller, Mr. Charles, Mr. D. Maurice. Charles, you're at it, sir.
Yeah. My question is this. As we have been dealing with a lot of things with this Black Lives Matter movement, so many things with the police corruption and how they've treated people of color, do you think, because young people are growing and developing, some of them are considering going into the occupation of law enforcement. With all that is going on, if somebody came, when a young person came to you, what would you say to them? They said, I want to go into law enforcement. What would you say to them in regards to, would it be a positive or a negative thing if they came to you for advice?
It would be positive. It would be positive. Yeah, I mean, no one person or group may not change everything, but different minds need to be influenced and be put in different areas. And sometimes, you know, just being there can make a big difference to the people that are around them. It's almost like if you're never associated or you're never around something different than you, you may never think about it. It may never open your mind up to it. So, no, I think it's a beautiful thing. Only one thing that I've always said in this country that I don't think our people should be doing is going into service for this country. Really, I still say that. I still stand on that. I felt that when I was 14, 13 years old, man, and I'm 57 today, and I still feel that way. I just don't think, based on the way this country has handled us, that we should ever enlist ourselves to go fight for this country. That's just my personal opinion. But if they want to go in law enforcement, they want to do something to change laws, whatever, I'm all for that, man, because we always need to be represented in many areas as possible. And a lot of times, some areas such as that, we're going to be outnumbered, but we'll have an impact. So whatever they decide to go into, as long as they have an impact, beautiful thing. Your response, Mr. DeMaris?
Well, I've had this conversation with a number of folks who I've encountered, and some of them want to get into politics, some of them want to get into the social justice, the social justice system, and the law and all this other stuff. And what I always present to them, I don't really kind of push them in either direction, but really encouraging them to research why they want to do this and research the realities of these professions, and also trying to keep their integrity intact, because you can get in these situations where you're protecting your profession or protecting the people who are maybe doing wrong things in your profession, and that overrides the reason why you joined. And so to be clear about what you're really embarking, nothing negative or positive. I take my feelings out of it, and really kind of, can you be that person of integrity to point it out when you see that there are some atrocities happening in that same profession? I had an interesting conversation with a friend of mine who has a daughter that is in armed forces, and she is a leader in a platoon, I think. And he wanted her to transfer here to Chicago, in north of Chicago, at a base. And she's African American, of course. And she was under this platoon, and word got back to her from the platoon, and she had heard some of the men talking about when they were coming in, some of them who are coming in, I guess they are the National Guard or whatever, not National Guard, but they are, they don't serve full time. They serve like one weekend out of the month or whatever. And she overheard them saying, I guess when Chicago was having the riots, that she heard some of them saying that, and this is very, very painful for her as a young girl, and I've known her all her life, that a lot of the white soldiers that were coming in from different parts of the country to come in and try to work the riots were saying they couldn't wait to get out there to kill some niggas. So think about how the position that put her in as a commander of forces who have that mindset. And so after they finished their assignment and all this other stuff, and she kept a close eye on them, she wanted to transfer back to Louisiana, where she was where she was before this all happened. And her father, who served also, was like dumbfounded that, hey, I had to deal with this. Now, in this day and age, she has to deal with this. And so didn't really have any words of saying, you know, baby girl, just stay, stick it out and all this stuff. He was mostly like, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And he realized that she was doing it for him, that the reason why she got in it, because, you know, she was doing it for him, because he served and she wanted to, you know, she's a daddy's girl. And it's just really hard to, you know, our ancestors went through this, our generation after generation after generation, and then you got a whole new generation coming in, kind of having this kind of will to try to go out there and do something and do some good, and they're faced with obstacles like that make their job just that hard. So what I try to do with folks who are trying to get into all these different aspects, I don't discourage them. I just, hey, listen to the realities of what's going on, research, and if you're man or woman enough to go in there and do what you need to do and keep your integrity and keep your head above water and do what's right and keep the principles of why you join with you and can continue to do that, then by all means, do what you need to do.
Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
No doubt. I agree with what DeMarie said. It's about understanding what you're dealing with and what you're going to go through and how it's going to, you know, how you're going to have to deal with, what you're going to deal with and how you're going to be treated. And if you understand that and you still want to move forward with those efforts, then great. Because I have a younger cousin that's starting to do that now in law enforcement. And when everything was going down, he took he went by the book as to how he thought some of these individuals that are being slain and being killed, unarmed African-American men, were kind of putting police officers and whatnot in a bad position. And kind of like they could have done something to avoid this is what he kind of said to me, because he was feeling some kind of way. And he was kind of mad at the individuals in our family that disagreed with him. And I had to pull him to the side, and we talked, and I said, I'm not going to try to change your opinion because I know how you're thinking and what you're thinking. You're going by the book and what you believe in. I said, but here's the thing. You're going off having nasty discussions with people in your family because of your profession. I said, but here's the thing that you must realize, that they look at you differently because you have never really been through anything that resonates with what these people who are being gunned down and being killed for whatever reason. You never had anything that happened to you like that in your life. But yet you're going in and telling people how they should think. And I said, it's just a hard thing for me to receive. I said, if you ever been through something like this, then I can see you saying that. But I guess I wanted to tell him, get a little bit more experience before you start shooting people down for their thoughts, right? Get a little bit more experience, because your heartache is something doesn't go right. Your mom buys you a polo shirt, sends you to Catholic school, and everything is all right. And I said, there's no disrespect to you, but just what it is. And he said, yeah, I'm going to think about that. I said, well, you do that. But I'm just telling you why you're receiving some of the information or the responses that you are.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, teach his own, but I do think we need to kind of be in many different areas. I'll say this, man, and I thought about this when I heard you pose the question. I'm just happy to hear that as young, you know, individuals, they want to do something. They're primed to do something other than play a sport, bro, or hold a microphone. Because for too long, man, our young people just thought that was the only way to do anything. And it's kind of, you know, in a way that's a little selfish driven. You know, you want to be in the glamour part, you want to do that. And if you love doing that, you have a gift to do it. I understand that. And I'll knock that. But for a long time, man, everybody thought the way to go is to grab a mic or grab a basketball or grab a football. As people, we are much more talented and much more gifted than that. And if something's in your heart to do or you feel like you can make a change of impact, you should follow that. Mr. DeMaurice, your question, sir.
My question is, what happened to the platform that some of these NBA players said they were going to use upon going into the bubble? And some of these players who were very vocal, they left, but I haven't heard anything that they're really kind of getting together and doing. You heard a lot from them when they were in the bubble, but I'm trying to figure out, not trying to be kind of negative towards it, but I haven't heard anything. And I'm wondering if you two have heard of some of these players who have left the bubble, who were very vocal in the bubble, who talked about boycotting, all this other stuff. What are they doing now?
You know, what's interesting is that in life, there's always a trend. There's always a trend that's going on. It could be tattoos. It could be this. But trends just don't last long. They have a period of time. They have a period of focus, a period of time. And usually what happens is when a trend is happening, a lot of people that just want to be part of something may not even totally understand where the trend came from, the nature of the trend, the foundation of the trend. They come in. They just come in. And when the trend is basically kind of start to move away a little bit like a wave, they go with the wave. Because they never understood the trend in the first place. They never understood what was really going on, what was happening. So it was fashionable for these young men you're speaking of to say something and put on T-shirts and do whatever. I think I sent you to a picture, man, of LeBron and Anthony Davis wearing the thing that Ruth Ginsburg wore around her neck from time to time. And to me, there was nothing more pathetic than that, bro. I would like someone to put a microphone in front of Anthony Davis and LeBron and ask what she stood for. Because I don't even think they know. But I tell you this, they thought in the back of their head, which is what I believe, that would resonate well with white people. it will make white people feel good about them. So why not do it? Because even when I text you to that, I text you that John Thompson, we all know who, for the most part, John Thompson is a legendary college basketball coach of Georgetown. The impact that he had on young black men that came to that school, what he did for Georgetown. Mr. Charles spoke of it numerous times, how he brought Patrick Ewing in, how much money they made for that university. But how men that came to that school that might have been a little broken, a little staggered, how he straightened them out and been a father to many. And we knew his thing was taking a big white towel and putting it on his shoulder and walking around with it. Name me one NBA player, one, that you saw walking around with a towel on his shoulder. Just name me one. But a white lady you know nothing about. But it was a trend going on, Ruth. It was a trend. So here's a white lady that you probably know nothing about. Here's a lady that said that she didn't like Colin Kaepernick taking the knee. Came out and said it. She didn't understand why he was taking the knee. It was no need taking the knee. It's disrespectful to the flag. But you're going to put on something around your neck to represent her when she passed? So here again, it's a trend, bro. They follow that trend. And a lot of times, the black players that follow trends, they don't only want to get in part of the trend when they think Madison Avenue and the white folks are acceptable of it. So a few months ago, and I'm not saying it has passed, but a few months ago, white America embraced what was going on. And they still have. So now it's okay. Because you never want to be outside of a trend. You want to be in the trend. So years ago when Colin Kaepernick took the knee, that wasn't a trend, bro. That would have been outside. So you don't want to be caught outside the trend and white people looking at you a certain way. So that's just my reaction to it, man. I mean, you kind of saw it coming. But I will say this, man. I'm going to put this question out there because what happened to Jay-Z, bro? Where's he been? I'm just wondering, because we all act like Jay-Z dropped off the face of the earth. Mr. Charles, your reaction to Mr. DeMarie's question.
Yeah, I agree with the trend part. I think that if it's beneficial from a standpoint of sponsorship, I think that plays a long part. I'm not surprised. I mean, when it first started, like I said, I've said a number of times, it's kind of like one of those trends, hands across America. We had, what was it, World AIDS Day, Say No to Drugs, depends on what's the hot topic. Everybody buys in. And I think, unfortunately, I thought this was going to be different. And for the younger people's sake, I hope it is different to a point. But with the athletes and these pro athletes, nah, I kind of saw the game. Everybody bought in to a point. And I didn't expect anything else from them. Because history has shown me that that's how it is for the majority of them. You have some exceptions. You know, DeMarie talks a lot about Craig Hodges and what he stood for, a man of substance and integrity, but he got blackballed from the league because he had a different take on stuff, and he went for the BS. So, you know, again, we always talk about it. Most guys ain't trying to endanger their lifestyle, the money that they make. So, yeah, but then, and then, too, you mentioned about where's Jay-Z. I don't know where he is. I think he's working on the next halftime show for the Super Bowl. I get off of that.
Yeah, probably, bro. Yeah, probably. He even had nothing to do with the last one. But, Mr. DeMarie, you know, you put the question out there, what you have for us, sir.
Well, I remember weeks ago we were having this sort of the same discussion, and you were saying, you know, do you let the folks in? Who have had a quote-unquote change of heart in what's going on. And this is why I'm hesitant in doing that because I'm not seeing what or I do see sometimes the motive of why they're doing what they're doing. And my thing is, why aren't they being checked? Why aren't they being taken our accountability be taken for, you know, they're very boisterous. They're very, you know, forthcoming. But as soon as they leave the bubble, it's like they disappear. You'll see them. I haven't seen folks marching. I haven't seen folks, maybe a couple of people will throw some money somewhere. I haven't seen much of that. But when you were watching these games, it seemed like every break they would have, a timeout break they would have, they would have a microphone in somebody's face, and they had a lot to say. And so where is all the energy now? And so it just makes me just more and more cynical about, you know, your skin folk ain't your kin folk. And so certain people are doing this not for the cause, they're doing it for themselves. And so I'm just very leery of that. When I see some people out there that are really down for the cause and they don't look like you, and they're out there just doing their thing, and they continue to do their thing. Folks that that said, you know, the reason why we wanted to come back and play is to use our platform to bring this into awareness of the American people. Where you at? The problem hasn't gone away. Where you at? What are you doing? How are you using your platform? How are you using your celebrity or your you know, all the stuff that you said you had? Where are you? And so it just makes me very cynical when folks do that. And I'm not the only one. A lot of people see through that. A lot of people see through that. And they'll take, you know, mental notes on it and remember that when, you know, stuff really hits the fan. And whether you're going to just duck and hide or you're going to really be out there on the streets doing what we need to do. The struggle, I always said that celebrities really, they're helpful, but they're not the people on the street that are really doing the work. And they shouldn't be in a position to decide how we do it. It's the people that are going through it who should decide what needs to happen, how it needs to happen, and keeping this thing going. So I would expect a little bit more from them, but in another respect, I don't, because they're going to save their bank accounts and their brand. And when it's all said and done, they're probably not going to kind of move the meter any kind of way based on what they say or how they act like they really care about this particular situation.
Well, you know, to me, if it takes you 5 years and countless murders to start speaking, to me that speaks volumes, bro. It speaks volumes, and that's what happened, especially with basketball players. Remember when Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee, they went through Westbrook. He said, "Nah, I ain't kneeling." And most of them said, "Nah, I ain't kneeling." Came out point blank and said it, bro. I mean, point blank. And they're in a league where they're in a league and they never challenged this, that they got to get permission to kneel. Think about that for a second. David Stern did that a long time ago because of Greg Hodges, and I can't think of the cat name, Muhammad. I can't think of that young boy. I can see him, but I can't think of his name. David Stern basically put that into their contract that they couldn't. And not one, Michael Jordan, you know, none of these NBA players ever fought to say, you know what, taking that Einstein in it. Not one. I remember years ago, the same job I worked at, it was a couple of years ago, they came out with these, they made up these different rules, different from our contract. So where they basically, if you do something, they were taking away your right to basically have an investigation, you basically are terminated. So our union told the people, yeah, sign it. So a manager brought it to me. I said, I'm not signing that. He said, well, I said, I'm not signing it. I said, and there's no need for me to sign it. He said, well, I got to tell you. I said, you don't have to tell me anything. I said, you can walk away and act like you said it to me. I'm not having this conversation with you. I said, I received the card in the mail. As far as I'm concerned, that's tearing away my contract. So if you think I'm going to sign away my contract, what my rights are, what I pay my union dues for. Now, if my union tells me to stop paying union dues, then guess what? I might need to sign it. As long as they're taking money out of my check every month, I'm not signing away something that's going to take away my rights to fight for if something happens. So I said to say that we have to always kind of be cognizant of what's going on. And just really, because realistically, part of the reason why nobody's pushing back and saying nothing, because we're too busy watching them dribbling on basketball. We're too more concerned about watching them putting what's going on. And we get lost in that. We do. So we give them a pass. We forgot that, you know, they ain't doing what they said they were supposed to do. I got a statement here I want to put out. And I think this statement applies to what we're talking about, and we're probably going to hear this more than once on this show. But Stokely Carmichael said one time, in every Negro, there's a potential for a black man. So it's up to us to determine, are they living up to be a black man, or what is a black man's state? Because to me, you know, you can do all you want, but when you decide to basically turn a blind eye, if I turn a blind eye to what's going on, you, Mr. DeMaurice, it says I don't care about you. If I see you're suffering, and I see something going on with you, and I may not even know you, but I don't care about you. I just don't. You're not in my circle. You know, you're black, but I don't care about you. So if I was to take this statement at that point, I'm just a Negro. But I come a black man. Seriously, when I embrace you, I realize I don't want any harm to come to you. I'm not happy if you're done unjust. It bothers me. It hurts me. And those cats, it doesn't hurt them. They've been isolated from it. They're more concerned about, you know, what they're going to get in the long run. It doesn't bother them. But I remember a few months ago when LeBron came out and said, remember he came out about the Chinese thing, and he said something silly and stupid. You saw the whole Chinese people was an uproar. They were burning his jersey, his sneakers, whatever the case may be. He didn't even talk about them as a people. He talked about something else. But what does he say or do that we take backlash to? Because you know we're too busy waiting for him to run up and down the court and do something spectacular. We're in that trance of paying attention, and we can't wait. If Nike puts off some sneakers tomorrow, are we going to be a black man, or are we going to be a Negro and go stand in line and sleep on cold concrete and pay overpriced for something that was made for $10? So, I mean, that's it. What it comes down to, what are we? Are we a Negro or we're a black man? I'll get your response about a statement. We'll go around pretty soon. We'll start to wrap things up in a little bit. But just hearing that from Stokely Carmichael, your reaction, Mr. DeMaurice?
I mean, it goes with the same statement that my skin folk aren't necessarily my kin folk. And so that, you know, people say about being woke, are you conscious of what's happening? And are you still under the illusion of that you're going to be accepted in the society? And so, or are you going to fight for your brother man? Are you going to fight? Are you going to be in a struggle? And so I'm always looking at that when I'm looking at men of color or black men. Now, are you part of the struggle, or are you not part of the struggle? Because if you're not part of the struggle, then I'm not going to be associating with you too much. But if you are part of the struggle, then I know that you're seeing the same thing I'm seeing, and you're in the direction to fight just like I am. And we'll stand shoulder to shoulder, and we'll do so. And so that's where it's gotten for me at this day and age. Either you're part of the struggle or you're not. And if you're not, I don't have time to be trying to get you to be part of that. You can't see it, then I got to let you sleep. But there's work to do, and I have to do it. And it's going to be a daily struggle to do it, but it has to be done. I can't sit there and just let things kind of fall apart without me trying to contribute to it in some way, somehow. So I think that's what that statement encapsulates.
Mr. Charles, your reaction is still quick, homeradical. A Negro or a black man? What's going on here, Mr. Charles?
Well, I think they let you know, people let you know by what, by their actions. I think also, too, they'll let you know once you get past the representative who they really are. And keeping that in mind, like you said, DeMarie said, you can't save everybody. So, therefore, you have to realize what position somebody wants to play, and then you have to go accordingly. But, if it moves forward and people are always trying to hide behind something, sooner or later they'll show you who they are. And I think that just talks to you about what you represent as an individual and what you stand for. And I think that's what it comes down to. I agree with that statement 100%, but you have to ask yourself that same question. Who are you? And take it from there.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree, and some people don't want to be part of what's going on. We just want to be comfortable. You know, we want to be comfortable. We don't want to see outside of anything what we believe, and, you know, just want to be comfortable. You know, and reality is that's your right. That's right. I just say if you choose not to be part of it, don't fake it. Don't act like you are what you're not, because that makes it worse. Don't act like you're really into it. And that's what they did with Demon Reese. But I think some of that, of them showing up and saying some of that stuff, they were told to, bro. They were told to, because the league wanted to look like they were taking a stance. They didn't want to come out and seem cold, that they weren't paying attention to what was going on. But we all know they wanted to get back and start playing basketball for one reason only. They wanted to make money, bro. The players weren't going to get paid. TV networks weren't going to give them money. So they wanted to make their money. So that's where a lot of that came from. As we start to wind down this particular segment of When Black Men Talk, it's what we usually do. We start to wind down. We go light. So I tell you something, gentlemen. I've been used to having the football package for the past couple of years. And now it's with DirecTV. They kind of gave it to me free, so I was happy to have it. But I think first week I didn't have it. Second week I didn't have it. But the fourth week I did have the Red Zone for free. Man, I got it back again today, and I'm going to tell you, it's a different way of watching a football game, bro. It's just a different way. Sometimes it gets to be a little dizzy, but it's a different way to watch football. But it was. I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, after you kind of view what you do. Did anything kind of stand out to you today?
Russell Wilson. How about that? That's all I'm going
to say. Yes, sir.
I'm not going to say anything else. Russell Wilson. I'm going to let you stay right there. Ooh. I'm going to let y'all take it from there.
Mr. DeMaurice, what stood out to you, sir?
This is a message to all Atlanta Falcons fans. If you don't stand up tomorrow and demand that coach and Matt Ryan to leave that team or be fired from that team after what you've seen in the last 2 weeks, you deserve everything you're getting with this football team. Y'all need to go out and demand, just like the Philly fans demanded that Wentz sit the bench so Hurts can come play. Y'all need to demand to fire the whole coaching staff, get rid of Matt Ryan, and start all over. Because what you've been getting, oh, man, I feel bad for Falcons fans, man. I really feel bad for Falcons fans because that team stinks. They show no desire to fight to win.
Yeah, that game, just like last week when they played, I basically, you know, tuned out and thought that, yeah, they had it. And I couldn't believe it, man. I just watched and I couldn't believe it. It's like, you got to be kidding me. And that coach just, you think about them being in the Super Bowl a few years ago. It's been downhill ever since. And Arthur Blank owns that team. I have no idea what he's waiting on. I have no idea. You know, I have none. But you have to make some changes because they're not going anywhere. I'm going to say this, man, we get out of here. Everything that happened today, man, I was impressed with Buffalo Bills, bro. I didn't pick them to win this week, but I'm telling you, the way they played football today, they did almost lose it towards the end. But, man, Buffalo Bills got something going on. That team has something going on. There's something special going on up there. And I'm not saying they're going to beat some of the top teams in AFC, but they're going to start to make some noise. They're going to be there at some point. They'll get there. Gentlemen, you all stay safe, stay strong. We'll get together and do it again soon. I appreciate what you do. It's When Black Men Talk. Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, I'm Mark Elliott.